Welcome to Body Signals, a Cygnos podcast. I'm your host, Bill Tanser, Chief Data Scientist here at Cygnos. This is Season 4, Episode 4, Genes Load the Gun and the Environment Pulls the Trigger, a conversation with registered dietitian Sarah Ermadon. On this episode, Alyssa and I interview Sarah about nutrigenomics. Specifically, we discuss the basics of DNA, genes, SNPs, and mutations, how the environment, and specifically nutrition, can cause genes to turn on or express, how Sarah analyzes her clients' history, symptoms, and their genetic reports to provide counseling, and how the addition of genetic information can provide personalized nutritional advice. This and many more insights. Now on to today's show. Welcome back to Body Signals. I am thrilled to have my co-host Alyssa Wilson back in the studio, registered dietitian. Alyssa, hello.
Hello. So glad to be here.
Yeah, and it's great to have you. And we've got a special guest today. We have Sarah Ermadon. She is a registered dietitian nutritionist specializing in chronic health conditions and sports performance utilizing targeted evidence-based testing. Sarah's also a nutrigenomicist, which may be a word that I made up, I'm not sure. And she's also the owner of Roots and Fruits Nutrition, which provides nutrition, genetic, and micronutrient counseling. So Sarah, welcome to Body Signals.
Thanks so much for having me today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. I would love to know how you got involved in this specific pursuit around dietitian, nutrition, and genetics.
Yeah, I went through a pretty horrific series of health conditions myself, particularly postpartum after both of my babies. So after having my first child, I had to have my gallbladder removed. And I was like, okay, great, we fixed it. And then after having my second child, the same symptoms happened all over again with kind of chronic cramping and just not digesting my food very well. And it was like, okay, well, I have those same symptoms again, but I don't have an organ to take out to fix it. So kind of went down this path of seeing a bunch of specialists with GI and not really making any headway with that. So a functional medicine practitioner recommended running a gene report. And I was like, okay, I don't know what that is, but let's do it. I'm pretty desperate. I got two babies at home I need to be healthy for. So we did a cheek swab and got my results. And it was like, oh, you have issues with methylation. I was like, what's that? So we'll kind of go into a little bit of what methylation is in our chat today.
Awesome. I was looking or just thinking back to my childhood. I think I was introduced to the concept of genetics and DNA when I was in fourth grade. And I remember not understanding it at all, and maybe not understanding it all the way through high school, and maybe finally thinking I understood it in college. But wondered if for our audience, we can just go through some basics about DNA and what exactly is DNA, and start off with the question of what's a gene?
Yeah, a gene. I think, you know, if we start off with kind of the National Library of Medicine description of DNA, so deoxyribonucleic acid, really big word. We shorten that to DNA, which is what most people hear. So that's going to be your hereditary blueprint found in humans and most other organisms. So nearly every cell in the body has DNA in it, located in the nucleus of the cell, but some of it also can be found in the mitochondria. And the mitochondria is our powerhouse of the cell. So that's what creates energy. It turns food into energy and then makes ATP with that. So adenosine triphosphate. So that's the body's energy currency. And then if you're going into what a gene is, so building on that foundation with DNA, we have the basic physical and functional units of heredity that are from DNA. So oftentimes genes will give us the instructions that we need to make proteins. Enzymes are also proteins that are made utilizing those genes. And when the Human Genome Project was completed in 2003, we learned the sequence of the human genome. We identified genes in it that it contains, and every human has about 20 to 25,000 genes in it. A lot of them, we still don't even know what they do. So we're learning those things all the time. And every person has two copies of each gene, one from each parent. Most genes are the same in all people, but there's about 1% of those that are a little bit different person to person that are slightly different. So the same gene could have small differences in their sequence person to person, and that can contribute to the unique characteristics, whether that's physical or metabolic in nature.
So things like eye color.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it would be a gene.
Yep. So we're going into eye color, and then things like how do you metabolize your caffeine? That's different person to person. Someone who says, I can drink caffeine all day long, it doesn't really matter to me. Other people are like, I can't drink caffeine after lunch or I won't sleep that night. So we can see those in genes, or the people who don't tolerate like eating cilantro that tastes soapy to them. I don't know if either of you feel that way.
I don't, but I understand the caffeine one, you know,
okay.
It's like harder for me to have caffeine in the afternoon than.
And I have no problem with caffeine, and Alyssa knows that. I actually roast my own coffee beans, so I'm drinking coffee all the time. But my wife does have that soapy cilantro gene, which is so odd to me because before meeting her, I put cilantro in everything and had to, if I wanted her to eat something I was cooking, had to completely omit that herb from cooking.
Yeah, and we love cilantro as a bioactive compound. So I kind of have that soapiness with cilantro, but I've kind of learned to tolerate it a little better or to put it in things that I like. I really like a chimichurri that you can put on steak, and that's nice with some cilantro. But yeah, in order to organize and study and interpret genes, we do give them names that are kind of long. Sometimes we'll abbreviate them. So for an example, there's a gene called manganese superoxide dismutase, and we'll, you know, give that a shortened name for MNSOD or MNSOD. And the MN is that periodic table abbreviation for manganese. So this gene codes for an antioxidant enzyme in the mitochondria that converts reactive oxygen species or free radicals to hydrogen peroxide. And that sounds like a bad thing, and it is initially, but then we have additional enzymes that take that hydrogen peroxide to turn it into water, which eventually is something that gets either utilized somewhere else or excreted. So our body has this process of taking the bad guys, the free radicals, which I used to think that was like a made up term. I think I watched a Jennifer Garner, like Neutrogena commercial about her face wash and like fighting free radicals. And I was like, that sounds fake. Turns out that's a real thing.
I thought those were protesters like at marches at first, but I guess not. You said a lot. You had me at manganese and that kind of lost me.
It's a lot of information for sure.
It is. And I don't know how you remember all of that. It's quite impressive.
Yeah. As a dietitian and most RDs, it's National RDN Day today. So way to go, everyone who had to take organic chemistry and biochemistry and all of these food science and, you know, everything with studying. So we had to learn a bunch of these things. But all these genes and enzymes will eventually lead to good health, or if they're expressing in a certain way, they can lead to, unfortunately, disease. And so those are the kinds of things I like to look at in nutrigenomics to either prevent or treat disease, or to just keep someone healthy to meeting whatever their goals are. So, but the cool thing is we can look to food to help us out with something like SOD, the superoxide dismutase. We're going to find that in cruciferous vegetables like broccoli and Brussels sprouts and cabbage, or in fruit like cantaloupe or honeydew. So if we have issues with an enzyme, we're going to also look to food to help work through some of those enzymes that may not be working as well as we would like them to.
Got it. Well, happy RDN Day to both of you, because you're both registered dietitians. One of the terms I've heard a lot, I don't know that I quite understand, is I hear about SNPs and then SNPs and mutations. I wonder if you could just spend a few minutes and tell us what is a SNP? How does it differ from a mutation in a gene?
Yeah, good question. And I find myself in some of my consultations, my client will stop me and go, what's a SNP? And I go, oh, that's right. I got to explain that. So a SNP or SNP is just an acronym for single nucleotide polymorphism, which we also call a gene variant or other Other people might call it a mutation. So these are permanent changes in the DNA sequence of a gene, which can have a downstream impact on the biochemistry or the overall health of an organism. So some of these SNPs can cause disease, like inborn errors of metabolism. Others can be or were protective at some time in history. So we might think of something as like, oh, I have a mutation, I have a SNP in this thing. This is presenting as bad, whereas in history 100, 200 years ago, it might have actually been protective for our metabolism, like at the time of a famine or something like that. But SNPs and mutations are often terms used interchangeably, but the more precise medical term would be a SNP or a genetic variant, since not all SNPs cause disease. So it wouldn't be super accurate to call it a mutation, but when people say it, I understand what you're trying to say. It's also not diagnostic. So someone who says, I was diagnosed with fill in the blank gene, usually I hear that with MTHFR, which stands for methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase, which is why we shorten these names. They're really long.
There is going to be a test after this episode airs, so please take notes.
Yes. Yeah, so there's a little bit confusion around that when people say that they were diagnosed with a genetic variant or a gene mutation. That's not diagnostic. It's possible that someone with MTHFR SNPs could later be diagnosed with something like homocystinuria or high homocysteine levels, which is usually like a poor metabolism of like folate, B12, or methionine. So that part is diagnostic with lab values, but the actual like genetic SNP is not diagnostic.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I remember doing my first genetic test, and there were all of these trigger warnings about some of the reports, like some of the Alzheimer's genes. Like it said, you may have this gene, you can select to not even see if you have this variant in your gene or SNP. And I came to understand, and correct me if this is wrong, if you have a SNP, it has to express in order for you to get whatever that gene's associated with. So if it's one associated with glucose dysregulation, it's not enough that you just have the gene. Something has to happen to turn it on or express. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is what I would agree with.
Okay, now the next question. Oh, I'm sorry, Alyssa. I think Alyssa had a question. I'm so fascinated by this.
I know, me too. So, and this is such an interesting area and just a cool, topic for dietitians to specialize in. So, you know, let's say you do have this SNP. What could cause that gene to actually express? You know, what could cause that? Is it just what we're eating or our environment or... can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, there's a number of things that can cause genes to express. So we're constantly giving our genes, our biochemistry, information and feedback. So we do this with our nutrition, with our sleep, with our stress, movement or lack thereof, sunshine and light even. So if we're adding in artificial light and we're being exposed to blue light all day long, that can mess up some of our circadian rhythms. Radiation or medications, toxic exposure. Some people are super sensitive to mold. So even being in the fed state, you know this, Alyssa, being in the fed state, we're giving our body a certain number of messages. Being in the fasted state, we're giving other messages. And so it's kind of like flipping switches on and off. And in the fed state, we're being anabolic. We're building things up. In the fasted state, we're breaking things down a little bit more. So if we're constantly snacking throughout the day, maybe we're unable to perform certain processes that otherwise would be able to help our body repair. But if we go an excessive long period of time without eating, we also could be without the nutrients that are needed to do other processes. And then you add in someone who's like in a high stress state all the time. And then it's like you're being chased by a bear, except you're not really being chased by a bear. And so our body's like, oh, well, digestion's not a priority right now. I need to be ready to run. So we might be actually pulling blood away from the digestive tract in order to get ready to run and avoid whatever is chasing us, except we have no like actual things chasing
us. But we're sitting at a desk.
Yeah, we're sitting at a desk, but we're like taking in so much information, even just being on social media and reading the news all day long. It can be just a little bit overwhelming. So we do need all of the right ingredients to make a recipe for our biochemistry to work the way that it needs to. So if we're going to bake a cake, we need to make sure we have all of the right ingredients in the right amounts, not too much, not too little. So if we have a little bit too much sugar, we might have kind of a more crusty cake. Or if we have too much or too little fat, our cake might fall flat. So we do need the right recipe and the right ingredients in the right amounts in order to function optimally.
So this discussion took a strange turn. I was there with the light switch and suddenly bears are chasing us as we're at our desk. I guess the question I have for you is if I have a mutation or a SNP and it's not, hasn't expressed, do each of these individual SNPs or mutations have different things that can cause them to express?
Yeah, I mean, I think seeing things as a whole, I don't really like to look at individual genes or SNPs on their own. I mean, you mentioned the Alzheimer's APOE SNP. I don't just look at that with metabolism. I look at other ones as well that kind of work in that same pathway. So I think it's important to take whole pathways together, but also look at the individual genes, listen to the client and what they're telling you with what's going on. And I think that's really important with doing gene reports is there's so many direct-to-consumer reports available today, which is great. I like that it's accessible, but also seeing, you know, a trained clinician who can go over your report with you so that you're not, A, overwhelmed by the amount of information and go, the world is ending, you know, Chicken Little, the sky is falling. But also, what do you do with that? Because if you have, you know, an Alzheimer's related SNP, there are things that we can do about that. And we can help clients not have some of those genes expressed that we're more concerned about. So yeah, it's not a short answer.
Okay. No, I understand. This is a very complicated topic. I'm glad you mentioned the test. I just, sent away for my first test. I actually did the cheek swab and sent it back. There's a number of companies that do these genetics tests, specifically around nutrition, correct?
As I understand it,
they're not all created equal. Like some do multiple passes, some are like a single pass. Are there some that
as
are better
as
than
the
others?
Swab itself, or
the way that
single pass?
Yeah, the way the genes actually sequenced in the analysis, or are they pretty much? If I do a 23andMe, will it have the same information and all the data I can download, the raw data I can download that, you know, a 3x4 might have?
Yeah, some labs will have SNPs that they find relevant. Other labs may read the medical literature and determine it to be less of an impact. So, I mean, if we have 20 to 25,000 genes and, you know, a few hundred of those are relevant right now, but we're getting more and more information coming out every day of what those genes do, I think it's important to not get lost in the weeds for how to interpret those. So I prefer to read the medical literature that the test company is utilizing itself. A 23andMe, it's not necessarily medical in nature, like you're looking at some of the ancestry stuff, but they may be missing SNPs that I find relevant. And so I prefer to not utilize a 23andMe. I don't feel like it gives me all the information for what I find clinically relevant SNPs to be. So there are a number of really good labs out there that do a decent job. So,
okay. Maybe it would help if we walked through some examples. So we'll just do some hypotheticals. So let's say I get this 3x4 test back and I'm trying to lose weight. It sounds like as a nutrigenomicist, you're kind of a detective. So you've got this report that gives some SNPs or mutations in my gene, but not knowing if they're expressed or not, like you said, it's not really diagnostic. So what kind of questions would you be asking me based on a report? And you can just pick a couple of snips in like weight balance that might be relevant to answer the question.
Yeah, I think, as you said, it would really depend on why the client is coming to see me. I want to make sure I address their questions during our time together and make sure we get everything we need out of an appointment. Or I usually do three sessions. So I would have an initial session where we went over an intake form, which included a family health history. What medications are you on, to make sure my recommendations are not going to conflict with medications that could have nutrient drug interactions? And making some suggestions for right now that can help you. Because some people come to me and they're just desperate for feeling better with digestion. It's like their digestion's messed up, or they're not sleeping, or they have chronic migraines or even suicidal thoughts. So it's like, I don't want to leave you hanging for 3 to 4 weeks
right.
in order to have just something, you know, like give them something to do that they can take home right now. So I ask, you know, similar to the gene expression questions, I ask all of those questions about how's your sleep? How's your stress? Stress is a huge one. For the reasons I explained with how our metabolism works, because completely unrelated to food, our glucose can spike if we have, you know, a stressful thing coming up, like an interview that I'm doing right now. So the stress will spike, my glucose is spiking, and now I'm being chased by a bear. So addressing stress with weight management and glucose management is usually one of my first go-to questions. If I have clients who... maybe they're a lawyer. Maybe they're working in really stressful or unsafe working environments. Like, do you feel safe at home? Do you feel safe at work emotionally, physically, mentally? So addressing some of those things right off the bat, where it's like, we need to calm the vagus nerve response. So we have the autonomic nervous system has our sympathetic nervous system, which is your fight or flight being chased by a bear time. And then we have the parasympathetic, which is our rest and digest. So we need to calm down. You have to calm down, first of all. So I like to address stress for sure. How much fiber are people getting in? That's another one with like glucose response, and trying to make sure that, you know, are we eating fruits and veggies? Not just because the FDA says you're supposed to eat fruits and vegetables, but because, you know, not only are they heart healthy, but they help support the immune system. They help support the microbiome so that we're having a positive immune response to the food that we're eating, to the stress that we have going on. So even just if we were to eat fiber first in our meal, then some like protein or fat in our, you know, more refined carbohydrates, if we're, let's say, eating Italian food, instead of reaching for the bread basket first, let's wait for our salad to come out, eat that, and then, you know, have our bread a little bit later. So instead of like saying, no, don't eat that, just like changing kind of how we react to while we're eating, if we're stress eating or stressed before we're eating, you know, our glucose is going to go up, completely unrelated to the actual food that we're eating.
Yeah, I understand that. So in this example, and I'll make this example about me, I am at 194 pounds. I'm trying to lose 10 to 20 pounds. I'm hoping that there's something in my genome that might give me a way of prioritizing what I should be working on. If it was my actual diet or stress or sleep. It sounds like, from what you just described, this, is advice that, you would get in a typical, consult with a dietitian. What advantage though, does the genomic information give you in this particular circumstance?
Yeah, I think there's some SNPs and pathways that can help you decide what is the best, most fruitful type of movement and exercise for you. So is that endurance exercise? Is that power training or high intensity interval? How is your recovery? Are you recovering well, or do you need to have some additional support for oxidative stress? So I think for like insulin sensitivity, glucose metabolism, energy storage, there's a SNP called PPARG that helps like regulate some of those processes. So sometimes we can have excessive energy intake and then storage. And that would really, I think, emphasize the intake on fiber that I mentioned prior. So taking, you know, the client's needs, their symptoms going on, and then putting that through the lens or perspective of genes that are relevant for the client's questions and concerns. Methylation is another big one. So how are we utilizing B vitamins? Are we actually absorbing them? If we're taking a proton pump inhibitor, we're malabsorbing about a dozen different nutrients. And there's a lot of patients who have weight issues that are taking acid reducers or proton pump inhibitors.
So methylation, you mentioned that term before. What exactly is methylation?
Yeah, so methylation is our body's ability to repair DNA, create new DNA, make new cells that work, detoxify. So all of kind of the methylation cycle is the foundation on which all other genes are kind of placed on top. So if you have a big Jenga puzzle, the methylation are the couple of rows at the very, very bottom. And if we're not making new DNA and we're not repairing cells and making new cells, we could be headed to a direction towards cancer or autoimmune disease or neurological disease. So we do need to make sure we're eating a diet rich in B vitamins. We need to make sure that whatever genes are related to those pathways are being addressed. Is our liver healthy? Are we getting fat-soluble vitamins in? Are we eating enough fiber to bind toxins to carry them out of the body in our stool? And what is our stool like? If we're not pooping, we're not detoxing. So I do ask my clients about their poop pretty often.
So methylation, do you have any clients that come to you and you look at their report and it's like, oh, there's no real problems I see in the methylation layer of this Jenga puzzle? We can move on from there. Are these things that you're talking about in terms of like increasing B vitamins, is that kind of a prescriptive that goes across the board that you see most people have some issues in that methylation layer?
I would say probably 50 to 75% of people who come see me, often they have chronic health issues. They're probably going to have an issue with methylation because they have chronic health issues. So those who have methylation functioning the way that it should, it's like they're probably not going to need any kind of support there, or maybe they have a pretty wide variety of their diet. So oftentimes I'll have people come see me and I'm like, hey, my biggest suggestion, add variety to your diet. Like we don't even need to touch, you know, the genomic side of things, but just adding variety, because every color of a fruit or vegetable is going to offer a different bioactive compound that is going to give messages to our biochemistry to function in a certain way. So sometimes it's literally just, hey, let's add some different colored bell peppers to your diet. Let's add some green leafy vegetables to your diet. And initially, I think people are a little bit resistant to that. But when I explain why, they're like, oh, okay, well, I didn't know that that was important. So I'll try and add that in.
That's one of my mantras from our last episode when we were talking about gut health and microbiome was eat the rainbow, diversity of fruits and vegetables to give you diversity in your microbiome. And maybe there's advantages beyond that that I don't understand as a non-dietitian, but it sounds like that's a universal recommendation is try and get as much diversity, at least in your fruits and vegetables.
Absolutely. And I think as far as methylation is concerned, sometimes people just need a little bit more what's called methyl groups, which plugs into the methylation cycle. So if they're not eating enough foods that have choline, like they're not eating eggs, they're not eating liver, betaine, which is comes from beets. So maybe they're not eating beets. They're not getting enough animal proteins with methionine. They're not getting enough B12 or folate. Like those all act as what's called methyl donors that keeps this process going. And so sometimes I'll especially see that in their genes, like, hey, we need some more methyl donors here. Here's some foods to focus on for that. And that will help support like just mental health, you know? So methylation does go into mental health challenges too. So I do love it when I have clients come see me and they have anxiety or depression. And I'm just like, let's address this with food first. And if we need to, we'll talk about supplementation. But we can meet these needs when I can see their genes and go, okay, let's focus on these things first.
Yeah, when we get back to the genes, it sounds like if this Jenga analogy holds, that you start at the bottom layer, because if there's problems there, no matter what you do at the top layer, you're still going to have problems. So is that the way, as a detective, you work? You kind of start at the bottom and then work your way up to find things that the client can address?
Absolutely. I agree completely. Or we like to say we're, as nutrigeneticists, to utilize the term you've given me, we work upstream. So the genetics starts with this is you before we add in the environment. So you may have heard the phrase genes load the gun and the environment pulls the trigger. What conventional treatments may do is play whack-a-mole with all of our symptoms, whether that's a medication or a lifestyle or a supplement. But what we want to do with nutrigenomics is go, this is what's happening up at the surface layer that we're seeing. But what we want to do is come down to the bottom of the iceberg and go, where is this really starting? Where is this rooted? And oftentimes we can pick just a couple of things that hit multiple targets downstream. So I really like that approach. And I think for weight management in particular, and maybe this is more conventional, but having clients that are having issues with weight management, I'm going, okay, you're having increased storage of fat tissue. You're having slow release of fat tissue for energy. So first of all, I get to apologize that they have less than optimal genes for fitness and weight management. I'm like, I'm really sorry about that. So let's go ahead and focus on the things that are going to have the biggest return on ingestion, as my friend Amanda Archibald likes to refer to, or return on investment, where, hey, I see that you have SNPs that make you have higher power training. Let's try to increase your muscle mass, which will increase your metabolic rate, which will increase your ability to make more mitochondria and have more energy and lose weight over time. So we kind of have to get a little bit creative in how we approach a client case. So just with weight management.
I want to go back to something you were mentioning earlier with the type of exercise, because that's an area I would love to get more insight into. I think that alone, to me, is worth the price of admission of getting one of these tests, because I listen to all the podcasts, I hear all of the exercise physiologists, and I'm going all over the map, from endurance exercises to stuff that's more strength. And I think, like a lot of our listeners, just trying to find the optimal mix of what I should be doing. And what I think I heard you say is that from our report from one of these tests, we might be able to rank what's the most important for us in order to achieve a goal like lose weight. Is that correct?
Yes. And then honestly, that is so different person to person, because if they had like a mold exposure, or they have heavy metals, or they have a chronic infection, those are things we have to deal with first. But I'm seeing SNPs in like inflammation and poor metabolism of medications and toxins. So it's like, okay, well, this is going on over here with infection or mold or metals, but what we're really seeing is we're hanging on to excess weight. So how do we do that best with the metabolism that you've been given? And that's where like the genetic perspective comes into play in such a helpful way, because maybe it's like we got histamine intolerance going on that we need to deal with. We can't even start a fitness regime because as soon as we start moving, we're moving histamine and toxins around and we feel horrible. So we may have to address like lower histamine foods initially, just to lift the fog a little bit, to get people in a place where they feel like they can start moving and not feel so horrible.
I want to ask about one area. I know Alyssa's got some questions around this area, so I'm going to let her ask questions. I'm sorry I'm dominating, but I've got so many questions. I've never learned so much in a single episode of Body Signals as I'm learning here. But our audience, they're interested in weight loss. They're also interested in regulating their glucose. And I know we've seen this with some of our members coming to us and asking us why their glucose graphs are all over the map from their CGM. And it seems like some, even though they're doing everything they should be doing, they still have a lot of dysregulation. Is that something that shows up in the genome?
The genome would not show that just because it's not diagnostic. It could potentially address what's going on underlying if there's a lot of inflammation SNPs, but I would first go to stress. Honestly, if they're all over the map, I would make sure I ask, like, have you had a full thyroid panel done? How's your sleep? Are you anemic? That's another one. So, and what kinds of foods people are eating throughout the day? Are they waiting too long to eat? Are they eating too often? Some people react really well to intermittent fasting. Other people, it just increases their cortisol, and then they feel even more stressed and continue to drain the adrenals.
We see that with their glucose levels too, where they're on a longer fast and it's rising, or they may see some spikes. So yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. Like, I'm just thinking about like a Cygnos user, like coming in and getting, genetic tests done and working with a practitioner or a nutrigenomicist and, you know, like kind of like comparing and seeing if they can see that, with more stable blood sugar and focusing on like different areas, like, okay, if we got the methylation under control, all right, let's focus on the exercise component. Like, do I tolerate like more of a higher intensity, or like maybe, you know, this longer steady state cardio is actually driving cortisol up. It's driving my glucose up. Like, how can I see that in my genes? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly there. And that's what makes it personalized medicine, right? Like, we don't want to be going at this from a protocol, because a protocol is something we create for lots of people all the time, but there's no like right diet for every person all the time in every situation. And I think most dietitians would agree on that, but especially if you're looking at it from a nutrigenomics perspective, because it's just so individual. And you might be feeling great one day and your digestion's great, your mental health is great, no concerns. And then, you know, a couple months later, something's changed. I'm like, so what's changed? And so I do like to ask, like, okay, when did this start? You know, and what changed? Oh, well, my parents got divorced, or we were in a car accident. You know, sometimes there is an emotional trigger or a traumatic event that can flip some genes on, that turn on inflammation and stress, you know, stress hormones. And we got to work through some of that. And I do a lot of referring to having counseling and therapy done, because I think it is important to address some of the mental stressors and emotional trauma that it can be underlying. And we're just not going to meet our goals nutritionally without addressing some of that emotional trauma too.
Yeah.
So if I want to get one of these tests done, I guess I could do what I did, which is just go to one of these companies. I imagine there's quite a few of them that do the testing, like 3x4. Are there other companies? Are there ones that you recommend more than others?
Yeah, I feel pretty comfortable utilizing the 3x4 genetics report. I feel pretty comfortable utilizing the MaxGen Labs report. So those are probably my two main ones that I go to. And I know the people who run it and own them, so it helps a lot to know what's going on behind the scenes, the research that they're doing and compiling that makes it relevant. So as a practitioner who is meeting with clients, I need to go over their intake form and their medical history. I need to interview the client and do any nutrition counseling there. So any help that I can get from a gene report company to either provide like an algorithm that helps me look you know, where I need to focus on or helps me interpret what's going on, because I have a big job ahead of me to help my clients. So if I'm kind of sifting through loads and loads of data, I don't have time for that. So just to be realistic.
Right. Did I do this the right way, or should I have found myself a nutrigenomicist first and had them tell me, get this report, I go get the report, then come back for the consult?
I think that's up to you. I mean, I think that anyone who has a report done, I think it is very valuable to go over that with a practitioner. I do have clients who have come to see me months after they had their tests done because it was available direct to consumer. And that's not necessarily wrong, but they had it and then it just sat there and they didn't do anything. It was an overwhelming amount of information. And that's not like that. I don't want that for you. I don't want that for anybody to have this information.
I imagine that's really hard to like get that data back and look at it and say, okay, now what do I do? Like, where do I even start? Or what is the bottom piece of like the Jenga puzzle that I need to work on first before working on some of these other factors?
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. So I'm perfectly fine with meeting people where they're at if they're maybe cost prohibitive or they're just not ready to discuss it. But I also ask my clients when their results do come in, I go, would you like me to put it up in your portal so that you can look over it before we meet? And the ones that are kind of more anxious, I'm like, it's probably not the best idea for you because you'll go, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. And it's like, no. No, let's go over these. We're going to go over the highlights and we're going to come up with a game plan and a strategy. So
I can definitely tell I'm going to need somebody to go over this report. So how do I find a nutrigenomicist or how do I find you? What's the best way to get in touch with you? Or if I want to go find one through one of these companies, do they have lists of providers?
Yes,
and
they
dietitians?
Do. Yeah. So for 3x4 Genetics, they have a practitioner locator. MaxGen Labs does as well. So if you're curious and want someone to go through your report with you, that's probably the best way to do it. I have my own website, rootandfruitnutrition.com, and some social media pages where you can get up-to-date health and nutrition related info as it comes into me and I have something to say. So those are helpful. But yeah, there's plenty of us out here, thankfully, that do this kind of work. And the field is definitely growing. And we're moving into how do we utilize these for professional athletes as well, and trying to optimize their sports performance and recovery. So it's a really fun time to be coming into this field. And I'm grateful I'm grateful for what I went through so that I, you know, dug into my SNPs one at a time just to learn on my own, which is what I did. I didn't really have as much of the support to go over my report with when I initially got it. So I literally just was on PubMed. I'm like, okay, what does this gene do? What does this gene do? Like, what does this mean for my overall health? But I'm really competitive and kind of a go-getter like that. But I know not everyone has the time to do that or the organic chemistry.
Yeah, I definitely don't have that. Wow. So, Sarah, we're grateful to have you on our show and to explain all of this to us, because this was really kind of a blind spot for me. I really didn't understand all that went into this type of genetic counseling around dietetics and nutrition. So it was so great having you on, and maybe we could have you on back to tell us more.
Yeah, maybe I could take a look at your report and we can see what we find if you're interested in going over that with all of your listeners and want to answer tough questions. We could be talking about your poop. So,
well, my listeners know I'm an open book. And even though I have not mentioned oatmeal in this episode at all, this is the first time, except now I've mentioned it. Well, I'm going to ask you specific questions. Yeah, I know, me too. I'm going to ask you specific questions next time about oatmeal. So be prepared. Thanks so much for being on, Sarah. We really appreciate it. And Alyssa, great having you back to co-host.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great chatting with both of you.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Body Signals. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe to our feed. Also, please share this episode with your friends. For those of you who are not yet Signos members, go to Signos.com, S-I-G-N-O-S.com, and use the code BODYSIGNALS, all one word, to get your 15% discount on Signos. We look forward to seeing you on our next episode of Body Signals.